Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now it's time for the Friday gathering. This week I'm joined in the studio by Fine Gael TD for Dublin Bay North, Richard Bruton, Roisin Shortall, Social Democrats TD for Dublin North West, Mick Clifford, Special Correspondent at the Irish Examiner, and Aisling Maloney, who's Political Correspondent at the Irish Daily Mail. And thank you all for coming in this morning. I want to start with data centres, a big story during the week. And Roisin, you want the government to stop now allowing new data centres to be built. And the reason we're talking about this is because we have found out that they're using 18% of all electricity consumed in the country. That's up 31% in the last year. So why is stopping them now the answer?
Well, Claire, the Social Democrats have been very vocal on this for quite a long period. Our spokesperson, Jennifer Whitmore, talks about this a lot and raised it in the Dáil a lot. For the last 2 years, we have been calling for a moratorium on data centres because they're a relatively new development. They have a lot of implications for energy use generally. You know, they put big demands on energy that's available, the electricity that's available. And when there are periods of high demand, that results in higher prices. It also puts a lot of pressure on the grid. And the point is that we don't actually have any state agency or government department that's in charge of them. So they're very much welcomed into the country by government with open arms. We don't know how many there are.
We don't 75, know, don't we? At
well,
the moment.
Sorry, the CSO had a lot of difficulty getting their hands on the figures, mm-hmm. scrambling around, trying to find out how many there are. So there's nobody in charge. There's nobody saying, OK, how many are too many? What are the implications, as well as for price and for supply and for the grid? There's also the question of how do they impact our ability to meet our climate targets? So there's a whole lot of very major issues there that it seems nobody in government is actually addressing. And we're saying, let's pause this. Let's ensure that somebody's in charge. And let's see, you know, what number is an appropriate number? Because, you know, at the same time, we're in a situation where the EPA are telling us that there's little or no chance of us meeting. There is no chance of us meeting our climate targets by 2030. So it's part and parcel of that whole issue. And while it's great that we have so many tech jobs in this country and they're very big contributors to the economy, that's very important. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you have an open door for all data centres.
Well, that's the question that's being asked, Richard. You know, the fact that we attract the tech industry operators here, is that why we have an open door on data centres? Is it part of the deal?
Well, first of all, some facts. There hasn't been a new data centre connected in the last 2 years. So there is a moratorium effectively on the connection of new data centres. So all this growth has come from the existing data centres. But it's not surprising given we've had 24% increase in employment, 65% of us are working remotely. Data centres are a much more environmentally sustainable way of doing a lot of the work that we have become paperless, cashless, digitised. You know, it is reduces our impact. That's one aspect.
But they're not just serving the Irish market. I mean, we've got to be honest
about
that.
They're not just serving the Irish market. And that is why we have become a leader in ICT. And we have attracted a lot of these companies who serve European markets to be based in Ireland. They generate a lot of employment. And also, don't forget, in 6 years' time, we will have surplus electricity. And we will be looking to high effective usage of that surplus electricity in Ireland. And data centres are one such use. So we've to manage a period at the moment. But data centres is part of the future. Like you're surrounded there by data mm-hmm. feeds. Like, which of that is are you going to give up? Are you going to give up your cash card on your phone or your Netflix? You know, all of this is supported by data.
Well, it seems that we are, and Mick, I'll bring you in on this, we are the home for European data storage. We're not just storing what I have here yes. in front of me. Yeah. Isn't that the point?
We're the
we welcome
home.
Them
They're
with open arms, for, rightly or wrongly.
We're the home for a lot of ICT, software, cloud developers. So naturally, we've attracted. We also have a climate that is particularly suitable for the management of data centres. And long term, it is really important that we continue to attract because data centres will be one
more
of the
data centres.
In the longer term, okay, when we have surplus electricity, it'd be much better to have data centres than try to convert, say, excess renewables into hydrogen,
which is difficult to manage. About the data centres in Ireland?
I'd certainly be concerned. I think it's really indicative of where we are in terms of the economy, and that is basically the foreign tech sector that are accounting for a huge volume of corporate tax dividends, or receipts, sorry, in this country. They're the ones driving this, and the government have a dilemma, and that is basically their, I would suggest it's a game of chicken to some extent. If they make the kind of stance that Roisin is suggesting, and there's very good reasons to do so, what will the reaction be from big tech sector if they do not have their way in relation to these data centres? Now, that's all very well.
So you think it is part of the deal?
Oh, definitely. It might be unspoken, but there's no questions. At the point you made, like, this is not for data domestically. Yeah. This is for beyond here. But the big issue is you can carry on like that to a certain point. But if we get to the point where there are ever restrictions on electricity, where the lights go out for any period of time, where it impacts on domestic or other industrial aspects of the electricity supply, then the government are in big trouble. And basically, they have to stop it getting to that point. But short of that, I think basically they're afraid to put their foot down, if you want to put it that way, in relation to the amount of electricity these data centres are using.
And that has been the subject of commentary, Aisling, beyond our shores, right?
Yes, absolutely. This got coverage not just in Ireland. As you said there, where we might be storing Europe's data, and it looks like the BBC were reporting on it, Euronews were reporting on it. So this is a topic that is not just of interest to us domestically. Other countries are looking at us too, and potentially, you know, a colleague of Richard's in Fine Gael said, you know, we're the envy of Europe. And when I was asking about, you know, Fine Gael and the polls and all that talk this year or this week, but that the data centres, it was very much signalled, as Mick was saying there, when we asked ministers, when we asked the Taoiseach about it this week, when that information came out from the CSO, that the first thing they all jumped to say was, with the data centres comes the tech jobs. And if we're happy to have these surpluses, we're happy to have boom, we're happy to have full employment. Now, not everyone's feeling it, but if we're happy to have that, we have to have these data centres. And interestingly, Eamon Ryan, the Minister for Environment, he didn't shy away from that. He also reinforced that message and actually criticised the opposition for calling for a moratorium, and said that while, you know, they were here and that they were energy, large energy consumers, they needed to focus on other things, like having that being renewable energy and then using their excess heat to power other buildings. But the brass tacks is they're huge energy consumers, and we're trying to decrease our consumption of electricity to meet our climate goals.
So is the cat out of the bag? Is that what we say? Come here, give us your jobs, and we'll allow you to build a data centre, Richard?
There has been a moratorium on new data centres for 2 years. So government is managing this within our somewhat constrained resources on energy at the moment. But long term, as we become a hub of renewable energy, we will want to have domestically based users of power instead of trying to have very expensive ways of exporting that. And I would go back to the fact that data has allowed us to transform the way in which we manage our affairs in a more environmentally sustainable way.
It's not there for the domestic market, though, Richard.
Digitized. And I would also say that one of the advantages of data centres is that they can manage their demand in a flexible way. So many of them have entered into contracts not just to supply Tala Hospital with surplus heat, but also to manage their demand. So when the system comes under pressure, they can take off their demand.
They go to a backup generator, which is fueled by fossil. Let's not forget, long term,
we want to electrify our needs. We want more electric consumption, Roisin, because it's more sustainable than fossil fuels.
I think it's somewhat disingenuous now of Richard to ask the question, are you prepared to give up your mobile phone? I mean, that's nonsense. It's nothing to do with restricting Irish data in this country. You know, at the moment, we are accommodating data from all over Europe.
Because we have become leaders in the sector. We have become, we have worked hard to win that position.
What exactly is the deal here? And is the government prepared to put our own electricity supply at risk?
That's what we've done. We have put a curb on the development of data centres. There's been no new data centres connected in the last 2 years. There is restrictions on the way in which they operate. They have to to manage their demand flexibly to take the pressure off the system.
Currently, data centres are using 18%
correct.
Of our electricity. That equates to every single urban dwelling. The amount that every urban dwelling in this country is using. No, that's the scale of it. Richard, sorry.
The scale is large. The reason why we do that is that there's a massive growth in the need to use data to support a more sustainable way of life.
Are we going to continue to store data in this country for the rest of the world? Does it matter to the government? You know, what
obviously,
kind of threat
there is an obligation
that poses to our electricity
there's
supply?
There's an EU obligation
to the electricity supply, to the cost of electricity, to our grid. I mean, why?
This is a good thing in the long term. This is a good thing, not a bad thing. We are going to become a centre of renewable power.
Just to clarify as well, what Roisin was saying there about that it's the same as all urban households, and households have reduced their electricity use. Like on your programme, you've had many people on talking to us about reducing our use, not putting on our washing machines or dishwashers at certain times in the context of the last year when we've struggled with energy prices and then the grid and the pressure on the grid and Amber Alerts and all those things. That's all in the same context. So are we kind of selling that section of our electricity grid to these data centres and then leaving our population only a small amount of
but
the electricity?
There does come a point, I think in fairness, Richard, where the government have to say to big tech either this far and no further in terms of...
We have said that already. There has not been new data centres.
There's about 30 in the planning stages and the moratorium's only until next year.
Yeah, they have not been connected. So we are managing that.
All right.
But we will soon have renewable power in very substantial amounts.
It's very slow.
But look, 2030 we will be in surplus. We will have more power than...
We're merely saying we need a pause. We need some kind of strategic analysis and we need proper regulation. None of that exists.
Aisling, you said a little earlier that analysis. Data centres came up in the context of conversations you were having with Fine Gael TDs about what's happening in the polls, the controversy we saw it last weekend in three newspapers about Leo Varadkar's leadership. So what were they saying to you about all of that?
So in terms of what Fine Gael parliamentary party members were saying to me this week was that Fine Gael maybe hasn't done enough to sell its victories and to got the messaging right. And they pointed to the fact that there is full employment and that the coffers are full and that they thought that that was a reason that people should have confidence in them and their polling numbers shouldn't be so low. However, a lot of them then did draw on the issues of housing and how that was dominating a lot of the conversations. But what's interesting is that I suppose Leo Varadkar addressed the parliamentary party meeting on Wednesday. As political correspondents, we thought a lot of that conversation we thought would be taken up with the budget, but actually addressed the criticism in last week's Sunday papers head on and said if anyone had issues they should say it to his face rather than saying it behind his back and airing it in the media, and that people, you know, he would always respond to them. And there wasn't criticism openly of him at that meeting, but only in the media. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting as well is those Fine Gael representatives, you know, there is a disappointment that they're at 18%. It's not the first time they're at this point. This last summer, at this exact point, they were at 18% as well. A lot of them, and, you know, Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, was saying, you know, polls come and go, you know, they will always
look
to bat away the polling numbers. But, you know, some of them are disappointed. And what I did hear as well is that, you know, wasn't just the parliamentary party members that were kind of, you know, discussing it the next morning with the polls coming out, that the WhatsApp groups from the branch members, you know, the further outside of Leinster House were kind of spooked by those figures.
Are you spooked, Richard Bruton?
Not at all. I'm around a long time. I mean, we had a very purposeful meeting on Wednesday night. I chaired it. It was really positive. It was focused on the needs of the future. We will be discussing the debate. We started discussing the budget on Wednesday night. We'll be focusing that on tax and enterprise, on housing and infrastructures, and on, you know, services for families under pressure.
They're too scared to say it to his face, but they'll go to the three Sunday papers that carried the story and give out stink about Leo Varadkar.
I don't think it's accurate. I mean, if you read those articles, that's not the way I saw it. I saw journalists following people, ringing people, you know, taking one comment and looking for another. So it's an age old, you know, thing that people do. But, you know, I think meetings like this are good. I think it galvanises the work of the
would
government.
Would it not be better, though, if they just said it to his face, you know, at those meetings?
It would, Donna. That's what Leo has said very openly, that, you know, this sort of grumbling does no one any good. I think that's absolutely right. But, you know, we're all human in the political game and these things happen. But, you know, I think it has galvanised the party very effectively. And I think, you know, we will, you know, be a much tighter focus. And I think Aisling is right. We do have to communicate the successes we're having, as well as, you know, there is a relentless, you know, in the media, it's always about the negative thing. I think
is he the right person to lead the party into the next general election?
No, I think he's been a superb leader, and I've served under loads of leaders of Fine Gael. He's very good. He's very thoughtful in the way he analyses issues. I think he's been a very successful leader. And, you know, if you look at Ireland, you know, 10 years ago compared to the Ireland today, and he's had a big part in shaping that.
So why are you at 18% in the polls if that's the case?
Well, that's, you know, I think the reality in any political
power fatigue, is it? That's
no,
what
no, I think it's a lot of people would have expected that at this time after the last decade, they'd be further on in their lives. But the truth is, you know, the financial crisis, COVID, you know, the Ukraine war, people are disappointed. And when people are, you know, carrying some sort of scars, you know, those in government do tend to suffer. That's the reality.
Well, but one of the big reasons they're not further, I think, Richard, it's fair to say, is the housing crisis. And that doesn't just mean in terms of a shortage of housing, but what people are paying in rent, particularly in the rental sector. And Fine Gael have two big problems at the moment. I think one is in relation to housing. As you said, they've been in power for 12 years, and there's no escaping the fact that it's over those 12 years the housing crisis has developed and has not been properly addressed. Possibly in the current government have tried to make inroads, but prior to that it wasn't.
You have to bear in mind that, you know, the first part of that period, first part of that period, housing had destroyed the economy. The economy was on its knees. 15% of people were unemployed. Yeah. That's the position
Absolutely,
that started 10 years
ago. You can go back to those early years to pretend
it could have been plain
sailing. You can go back to those early years, and I did it recently in a column, and there were warnings from 2012, 2013, what was coming along in terms of housing. There were opportunities that NAMA could have been used for that were not used for at the time. I think there's no question it was not treated as the kind of emergency that it grew into. The other problem that Fine Gael have, and it's a very natural one, and that is, I think you mentioned it, Claire, power fatigue. I think you have to go back to De Valera at 32, 48, the last time somebody was in power for 16 years. For Fine Gael to win in the next election, they'd be projected, they'd have to be 16 years continuously in power. And if you're going into that election after 12 years in power, you need to be able to wave your flag and show how much you've done to bring the country forward. And admittedly, perhaps they don't get the credit they may deserve in terms of the economy, but that's been completely overshadowed by the likes of the housing crisis and everything that flows from that.
If you look at the scorecard, like 12,000 people, over 12,000 people in emergency accommodation, you know, that's a number. You know, full employment is a number. They're all numbers, but you mean, you know, a roof over your head is quite serious. And when you don't have it.
And the cost of rent, I think, is a huge thing.
Okay, Roisin, what's your thoughts on this, looking at what we heard and saw in the papers about Leo Varadkar on Sunday, then the poll at 18%, reports from the parliamentary party meeting that everything was grand and everybody was happy?
Yeah, there's no way that a number of Sunday newspapers all decided at the same time they were going to go with this issue. I mean, clearly there is a lot of dissatisfaction and concern within the Fine Gael party. And
You think someone is concerting the stirring?
Well, that may well be the case. I don't have any proof of that. But I can well understand why Fine Gael TDs and senators are nervous. And this was even before the poll came out on Wednesday. You know, everybody now is looking towards the local elections next year and the general election coming up sometime soon. And increasingly, I think the public are asking, why is it that things in this country don't work? We are a country that is wealthy. There's a lot of money there. But why does the country not work? Why aren't there enough houses for people who are looking for houses? Why are house prices so high? Why is rent so high? Why is it so hard to get access to a service? Like if you have a disabled child and you're looking for a very basic thing like speech and language therapy, why do you have to go on an 18-month waiting list for that? If an elderly parent is waiting for home care, 6,500 people waiting for home care. You know,
they're fair questions, Richard, aren't they?
Why is it if there's so much money there? But can I just make a further point? Why is it that if there's so much money there, things don't work? Why is our public transport so poor? And at the same time, in the context of this, people, you know, saying, how is it that this things aren't working properly? How is it that there are waiting lists for every single thing? How is it you have to fork out to access basic public services that should be universally available? And at the same time, the Taoiseach of this country, who has been in government for the last 12 years, is prioritising the idea of tax cuts. Tax cuts for the top, you know, 23% of earners in this country. Why is this a priority for him? Does he not see the rest of the country? Does he not see what people are concerned
and
about?
And the poll actually today, further results from it show
for the whole
people
of the country
don't want that in the main. And Fine Gael voters don't really want it either, Richard. They want the services to work.
I think people were asked to select one thing that they would favour in the budget. The reality is the budget will do loads of things. Only 10% said they thought social welfare increases should be a feature of the budget, which is, you know, I think quite bizarre. I think, you know, there are always problems, and I think we wouldn't be in politics if there weren't challenges to be met. But, you know, we've lower class sizes than we ever had before. We've more people going through third level college. We've more people doing apprentices than ever before. We've more people being treated in our hospitals every year. 7 million are now being treated each year in our hospitals. You know, so there are a lot of positive things. Of course, if you measure by, you know, people waiting, there will always be challenges in the health service. There isn't a health service in the world that doesn't have these sort of challenges.
It's not just the health service,
you know,
though.
But yeah, and we have to invest in more infrastructure. I mean, the truth is that for 25 years, we didn't build a single hospital. Now we have loads of hospitals, you know, in construction and planning. But, you know, we did allow over successive governments to allow the infrastructure, public infrastructure.
Do you see the point
that
Roisin is making? Your party leader goes out and talks about
that's the very
tax
first
cuts.
Thing. Yeah, people are struggling with the cost of living. 52% say they can't make ends meet. So they do
cutting
need...
Cutting tax
they
for the higher need, earners they do doesn't need, address that
they
issue.
They do need relief on tax. They do need relief on social welfare. Only 10% said they want an increase in social welfare. I believe we have to have a package of social welfare to support people. So, you know, I think the truth is the budget must be a balanced package that supports people with a lot of pressures that are out there. You know, very significant investment in housing will be there.
Okay.
And a package for people who are struggling with the cost of living.
Wouldn't it be much better if the Taoiseach spent his time and gave his attention to things like child poverty, for example?
He has made child poverty one of the pressure, the key.
He hasn't done anything about it.
He has set up a group on that and he's delivering in that area.
Okay,
We will double the support to childcare next year.
I have a couple of clips that I want people to hear now. The Taoiseach calling out bad behaviour in the Dáil on Tuesday just gone. We'll have a listen to what he had to say.
I heard Deputy Barry speaking on the radio the other day, and he made a point that I think was very, very valid, that those of us in politics often complain about the quality of discourse and abuse and social media abuse and all of those things, but sometimes we're our own worst enemies and we set the standard in the way that we behave. And none of us are angels in that regard, but I think given what Deputy Bacik has said, we should all resolve to conduct our business in a more parliamentary manner.
Well, that was Tuesday. Now we move to yesterday, to Thursday. Lively exchanges in the Dáil between the Taoiseach Micheál Martin and Paul Murphy, TD, following a question from Paul Murphy about the consultative forum on neutrality and his reservations about the speakers invited to participate in that forum.
That is intolerance. You guys are no great advocates of freedom of speech at all. Uh-huh. And I shudder to think of the day when you would ever be an authority. Because by God, would you put a jackboot on people who might have views different to yours? That's where you guys are coming from. That's where I stand.
Can I ask the Taoiseach to withdraw that?
I will not withdraw anything.
Can I ask that to withdraw that? I'm asking you right now because in the past there was an issue about not asking for it immediately. He said that if we were in power, we'd put the jackboot on people. Can I ask him to withdraw that comment?
I'm not withdrawing. Like, we're in a parliament.
Well, he did later withdraw that comment, we know. This happened as well yesterday. The Ceann Comhairle not happy with the Sinn Féin TD, John Brady, who presented the Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien, with an on-call pager from a firefighter. Let's hear Sean O'Farrell's reaction.
No. Excuse me, Deputy Brady. Deputy Brady, you're completely out of order. Do not make a charade. Do not carry on a charade in this house.
Please.
Absolutely outrageous behaviour and not to be encouraged.
So, Aisling, have they all lost the run of themselves? Or is it the heat or what?
Yeah, it must be. Maybe they're itchy to get out after for recess. But yeah, it's very interesting about this parliamentary theatrics that's going on. And we're seeing it kind of week on week. There's kind of one or two little episodes that are kind of the flares are coming up and people's tempers are flared. But, you know, this stemmed from when Ivana Batrick said that we kind of raised the issue in the Dáil, and when the Taoiseach responded to it, looking for more parliamentary behaviour. Matthew McGrath then responded to her looking for more parliamentary behaviour by thinking that was an attack on the rural independence. So it's all very, you know, tetchy. You know, you say it, I'll respond in a more tetchy way than maybe the parliamentary language used to be. I suppose the issue or the idea was raised that potentially, you know, discourse has changed and you know, our general, you know, societal discourse has changed, and maybe that's seeped into the parliament, or maybe it's seeped out of the parliament.
Mick, what's your take watching this for a long time?
Yeah, I think there's definitely this particular Dáil term, I think things have got a bit worse. I think we've seen stuff like the abuse of privilege has come more to the fore in the last 5 or 6 years in a number on all sides of the house, it has to be said. It's not just one side. But there seems to be a certain rise of temperature there in terms of the current configuration, particularly with Sinn Féin in opposition, providing, you know, perhaps some people would suggest the makings of a new kind of left-right divide as such, and perhaps the established parties seeing them as some sort of a threat. And then you have the individuals who are at the heads of all those parties and their capacity for robust exchanges. And added to that, and I think it's definitely a point, the whole area of social media, there's an element of that level of discourse, a small element of it, as it is in every part of society, it would seem seeping into the Dáil.
People looking for clips to run on social media.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Richard, have you noticed a change?
Oh, it's a dramatic change. And like when I entered politics, there would have been 4 pages of broadsheet coverage every day on what happened in the Dáil the previous day. And, you know, for politicians, politicians, coverage is the oxygen that keeps them going. And unfortunately, I think social media is more than a little to blame. You know, people are now trying to grab a social media slot, and you know, they're reacting to this coarsening of dialogue generally in social media to coarsen what they do to try and catch attention. I think that's sadly the way it's going. I don't think we can turn back the clock.
That's we only have a small amount of time left, and I just want to touch on Tara Mines, because I think everybody was really putting themselves in the shoes of those workers who got that news, Roisin, 650 of them, that their jobs were temporarily gone. And the tragedy of it is they don't know what temporary means. It's a really, really difficult situation. Yes. And then we had some opposition politicians saying, well, the government should have been able to see this coming down the tracks, because we knew back in April that there were problems with the energy bills there and the costs that the owners of Tara Mines were facing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a terrible shock out of the blue completely. And 650 people desperately impacted by this. And you do have to ask, why was that decision taken by the parent body when at the same time their profits are soaring? I mean, the company made profits of €1.4 billion last year. And while there's a dip in activity at Tara, you would have to ask, like, why is it actually being closed down, even on a temporary basis?
Well, they spoke about high energy costs, but general high costs, and then they spoke about the price of zinc,
which
is
tanked. Yeah, but in any industry, it's not, you know, profit-making the whole time. There are highs and lows with that. And why could that not have been carried by the parent company for a longer period? But, I mean, if they were running into difficulty, if they were considering this, there should have been notice given to the government, and all efforts should have been made to keep the premises open, or at least establish clarity about how long this temporary layoff is. The last time it happened, it went
really
for
short
10
amount of time left. And I just want to get Richard Bruton's response to this. Do you think that those questions are reasonable of the government, that you should have known more about this before it happened this week?
Well, we didn't. The company decided on the back of a 40% drop in the price of zinc to that, and the shipping of 100 million in projected losses, that they would suspend operations. Now, the government was in discussion on energy with them. They got absolutely no indication that this was the direction of thought. Obviously, support on energy costs is limited by state aid rules, so there there are some supports being provided, but you know, the discussions were really about long-term lower energy costs for companies like them.
We have to leave it there. Thank you all for coming in today. That's all we have time for. You can catch up with anything you missed on the RT Radio app. The programme was produced by Barbara Feeney, research by Emma Cawley. Our broadcast coordinator is Jarlath Holland. Liam Mullen was on sound. It's over to Louise.